Today, why did the Home Office accuse 34,000 international students of cheating and then revoke their visas? And in opinion, Majid, Sheffield's flamboyant 29-year-old Lord Mayor, reflects on his time in office before stepping down this week.
I think that's what's so sad about many of the cases. The people who came here to study came because they had such a positive impression of Britain's reputation. And then when they are accused by the government of cheating, they found it very hard to explain to their families at home that this accusation is a mistake.
Just over a year ago, The Guardian's Amelia Gentleman broke the story of the Windrush scandal. Now she's investigating another Home Office controversy that could be even bigger in scale. Tens of thousands of people were accused of cheating in an English test they passed years earlier, and then had their visas revoked.
It's hard to say whether this was intended as an act of cruelty, but certainly we can see that those people who were wrongly caught up in this have really, really suffered as a result of the Home Office decisions.
Yesterday, Labour MP Stephen Timms urged ministers, who still insist they were responding to massive fraud, but are looking into the matter, to act quickly.
Many students face desperate hardship and need urgently to know the decision because their future depends on it.
And now the National Audit Office has launched an investigation into the government decision to accuse so many people of cheating. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, the English test scandal that shows again the human cost of the government's hostile environment.
So basically, what this test does to check the ability of your English, general English, like speaking, reading, writing and listening, those are the things they test you.
One of the people wrapped up in the scandal is a man who wants to be known as Hussein. He's in his early 30s.
Hi, my name is Hussein. I am from Bangladesh. I first came into the UK at 2004. The reason for me coming into the UK was to study, higher study, because of the reputation of British study around the world. A UK qualification would help me to build a better future for myself and to get maybe a better job opportunity.
In order to get a visa to study in the UK, he had to take an English speaking test at the British Council in Bangladesh.
And over there, I score in speaking 7 out of 10.
Then in 2012, after 8 years in Britain, Hussein had to take another exam called the Test of English for International Communication, or TOEIC, to help get his student visa renewed.
Okay, basically what happened is it's like a normal college.
He remembers taking an overground train to a college in northeast London.
I went over there. There was a guy, I still remember the guy's name, and he checked my IDs and all this stuff. He took a photograph of me, and then he took me to the exam hall and put me in front of a PC, and then checked all the headphones and everything, and then I was ready for the exam. That's what he said.
Hussein's TOEIC test was in 4 segments, speaking and writing together on the first day, and then listening and reading 2 days later.
I didn't do a head count, but by look of it, it was 15 people, maybe 15, 18, 20. They said, okay, start. Then we started. And there was a timer on top, on the right-hand side. That's what I can remember, as it is like nearly 5, 6 years ago now. It is not only easy, it was extremely easy. Anyone have a basic knowledge of English can achieve very good score. There shouldn't be any necessity for cheating, or they are saying it is a proxy taker. If I'm confident about myself that I can speak in English, why would I trust someone else to do my job? I didn't notice any suspicious things or irregularity. I did quite well, to be honest. Speaking, I had 160 out of 200.
Hussein passed with flying colours. But
that doesn't mean anything to me at the moment.
Because 3 years later, everything changed for him.
I think it was early 2015. They gave me a letter saying that I am liable to remove from the country because of a fraud TOEIC exam, which I had no idea until they sent me a letter, and because of that, I am suffering now.
Hussein feels that his entire life has been put on hold since he got that letter. And he isn't alone. It's believed that thousands of others feel the same way. Senior Guardian reporter Amelia Gentleman has been covering the story of these TOEIC tests required of people renewing their UK student visas. It's a story that began in 2014 with a BBC Panorama documentary.
This is multiple choice with a difference.
What they uncovered is undeniably shocking. They have footage from one centre where they show the invigilator reading out the answers to a multiple choice test to a room full of students.
So one cat, two cat, three alpha, four cat.
Unbelievably, the invigilator is simply reading out the answers. All our undercover needed to know was that alpha meant tick box A, beta meant box B, and so on.
38 beta, 39 alpha, 40 alpha.
So the students, you can see them very, very quickly answering a long paper in a matter of minutes because they're being given the answers. In a second test centre, you see a different kind of cheating where a room full of students sitting, each of them at a computer, are given proxy candidates who come and stand by them.
With all the candidates in their places, new people enter the room
and help them with the spoken element of the test.
Remarkably, there's a fake sitter for every candidate, and ours sounds like a local.
Excuse me, when finished this exam? What time, you know?
It starts, it's going to finish about 3:30.
So there's no question that there was organised cheating happening in at least two of the TOEIC test centres.
And it seemed pretty outrageous at the time. It was shown to the then Home Secretary, Theresa May. What did she do about it?
She said that what the documentary makers had uncovered was very shocking and that she was going to take action. And I think really the uncertainty and the problems begin with the action that she did take, which was to ask the US provider of the test to analyse the results of all 58,000 tests between 2011 and 2014. ETS came back and they said that around 34,000 of them showed there had definitely been some kind of cheating. A further 22,000 of the test results showed that perhaps there was something suspect had happened. And only 2,000 test results were absolutely clear of any kind of fraud.
So basically the vast majority, 90%, were marked out as definite or possible cheating.
That's right. And this is where campaigners and lawyers begin to ask questions.
They felt it was implausible for so many candidates to have cheated. But the Home Office took drastic action, revoking 34,000 visas and asking 22,000 to resit the exam.
Minister Caroline Noakes.
Mr. Speaker, test centres operate.
Yesterday, Immigration Minister Caroline Noakes argued that there was evidence of widespread cheating.
And the scale is shown by the fact that 25 people involved in organising and facilitating language test fraud have received criminal convictions.
But hundreds of court cases are now underway from people determined to clear their name.
Lawyers who've been representing some of those who are adamant that they didn't cheat say that when the evidence comes through from ETS, it's often extremely unreliable. One of the lawyers told me that they'd seen cases where the evidence was riddled with errors. Sometimes it's clear that the individual identified is not in fact the individual who the lawyer is defending, so that the name isn't quite right, that the date of birth is wrong.
council tax rising for 2 years.
It's important to remember the political context at the time these allegations came to light.
And yes, stop uncontrolled immigration with an annual limit on non-EU economic...
The Tories had pledged to dramatically reduce net immigration to the tens of thousands.
Good immigration, not mass immigration.
And the Home Secretary at the time, Theresa May, infamously talked about creating a hostile environment for illegal immigrants.
It reduces the number of appeal rights that people have, and it means we'll be able to deport foreign criminals first.
It was a time of go-home vans.
It survived 2 weeks on the road through certain immigrant communities in London during the summer.
The beginnings of the Windrush scandal, when legal aid had been pulled for immigration cases and students were being targeted.
Certainly the Home Office under Theresa May was working very hard to control the number of immigrants allowed into the UK. And one of the areas where they felt that they could reduce numbers was in the area of higher education and universities. At the same time as this Panorama documentary, the Home Office was working on closing down a larger number of colleges that they described as bogus colleges. Again, many of them were unreliable, fraudulent institutions, but at the same time, a lot of bona fide colleges were also closed down by the Home Office, leaving students who had come here to study in good faith out of pocket and unable to continue their degrees.
In 2015, Hussein received a letter saying that he had been part of the fraudulent TOEIC tests, had cheated, and that if he wanted to appeal, would have to leave the country first.
Prove yourself innocent, then we'll talk about you coming back or not. Since the letter came in, I had to go to a reporting centre every month to say that, hey, I'm here. Early 2017, some 2 years after the allegation, approximately, one day I went for what we call signing, reporting as the same thing. They said, okay, we're going to detain you, we're going to send you back home. We got a flight booked for you. And they took me to Heathrow Airport. I just told that lady over there that, okay, I'm not going like this because I don't have my belongings with you, first of all. Second of all, if I go now, you could easily say I voluntarily leave. There was two other gentlemen came in. They said lots of things like, if you don't go now, they will handcuff you. And then they also said, you will lose your dignity. I said, look, at the moment you send that allegation to me, I have no dignity. I'm living a life which is not worth living at the moment. I'm in an open jail unless this matter is solved. I was detained for 7 days. First 2 days, it was a bunk bed and an open toilet. It's like a cell. Two people and there is an open toilet. There is no door, only a curtain to it. I'm a very optimistic person. That's why I'm still fighting for justice. But still, at the end of the day, I'm a human being. And there is some way I feel most of the time is like low mood and very, I feel like I'm in limbo. My father sent me over here to study, not to get an allegation. And he spent all his money. And when I first, my uncle who lives over here, I lived with him at the moment. When I showed it to him, he was shocked, and he is a GP. Over here with the NHS. And then he told my dad said, how comes it's possible the government is lying? For him, it is totally quite unacceptable for him that how comes a government like UK can do such a huge mistake.
So all of the people you've met have come to the UK to study. They've sat an English exam and been told years later that they cheated in it. As a result, many of them have been detained because they're essentially going to be deported. What emotional state were people in?
The toll on these people's lives has been profound. They're not able to continue their studies. They're not able to work. Many of them feel that they can't return home until they've resolved the mistake. One of the women who I've met had to be hospitalised because she was feeling suicidal and she remains in a very, very fragile mental state. The charity Migrant Voice that has been campaigning for a lot of these people notes that many of the people that they've been campaigning for have suffered very badly from a mental health perspective. I think once you've invested so much money in coming to this country to get an education, it's quite hard to go back with this allegation of fraud or of cheating hanging over your head. It makes getting work back in your home country quite difficult. And what's particularly difficult is that the allegations first were made in 2014 and they still remain unresolved now, 5 years later. The people I've spoken to are furious, they're devastated, and they are so angry that they're spending more money on trying to clear their names.
It is like a David and Goliath fight, which the Goliath had nothing to fight with, but David has bottomless taxpayer money.
Hussein currently can't apply for a student visa and he can't go to college. He has submitted for a visa under human rights grounds, but that has been refused. His case was at the Court of Appeal for over a year. But recently the appeal process has been stopped and tomorrow Hussein has a hearing in a first-tier tribunal.
Oh, yeah. I cannot work. I am totally dependent on my uncle. I live with them. He's along with me fighting for the justice to find out why.
Lawyers who've been acting for those accused have told me that judges very often are inclined to believe the evidence of the students and have raised real concerns about the quality of the evidence provided by ETS. One of the lawyers I spoke to yesterday said he'd represented 15 TOEIC students, of whom 14 had had the cases ruled in their favour.
So you're talking about hundreds of cases. I mean, that's pretty widespread. But we're talking about tens of thousands of people who were accused of cheating. Now, ETS may have been right in a number of those cases. But if they weren't, why aren't there now thousands of appeals?
Well, we don't know how many court cases there have been because the government isn't keeping records of them. So it's very hard to get a handle on exactly how many people have fought this and how many people have just decided to go home and close the page on their bad experiences. But one of the great difficulties for students who've been accused of cheating is that at exactly the same time that these allegations were made, the Home Office decided to remove most appeal rights for immigration cases and also to remove legal aid for most immigration cases. A lot of this was down to a raft of policies to create a hostile environment for illegal immigrants.
It's interesting because part of the debate here is that international students were included in that tens of thousands target. But the reality now is that there's a lot of pressure, even from within the Conservative Party, to either scrap the target or at the very least take students out, because there are real worries about our international reputation with regards to this and the idea that Britain might be losing share of international students, which is quite a lucrative market, to other countries around the world.
I think it's definitely the case that news of this TOEIC scandal is beginning to filter back to countries which have historically sent a large number of people to study in the UK. Equally, news of Britain's unfriendly immigration approach towards foreign students is becoming well known in those countries. So it's not surprising that we're losing the market share in international students.
Although one thing the Home Office might say is that the hostile environment that we talk about a lot these days was about illegal immigration.
Absolutely right. But there is some uncertainty about the Home Office's own ability to be clear of who is a legal migrant and who isn't a legal migrant.
For me, it's still that strong belief in law and order for myself is still there. That's why I'm fighting. Allow us to prove ourselves, because at the moment we are going nowhere. It's a dark tunnel without any hope of light.
That was Amelia Gentleman. Keep following her reporting at theguardian.com. She has more scoops coming up this week. We contacted ETS about the allegations included in this episode, but they have yet to respond. The Home Office said that a 2014 investigation had revealed systemic cheating indicative of significant organised fraud, stressing that 25 people who facilitated the fraud have received criminal convictions. They said the Home Secretary had listened to MPs and has asked for further advice from the department. Now, I have a little tiny favour to ask. If you're enjoying Today in Focus, I wonder if you'd consider voting for us in the British Podcast Awards Listener's Choice category. If you're willing to do that, go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Coming up, a 29-year-old unconventional Lord Mayor. Welcome back. Now we hear from Somali-born refugee Majid Majid on his time as Lord Mayor of Sheffield.
It really has been a whirlwind of a year, and at times I've not really had much time to sit back and reflect. I'm actually currently sat in the Lord Mayor's parlour, and it is the grandest place I've actually been in, and it's like to acquire this as my office and my space. And thinking about, well, gosh, did the people who ever built this office and this like amazing structure actually think that one day somebody like me would actually hold this role? Probably not. People just are such like suckers for tradition, but like what is tradition if it isn't peer pressure from dead people? People's attention spans are getting shorter, right? And we need to engage people on a more emotional level. And that's something I always try and do, because people don't remember what you say, but they remember how you make them feel. And I always try and make people feel something. A lot of my critics would say, oh, that guy, imagine all he does is show off. He's just attention seeking. And I'm like, well, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm literally peacocking. I want to draw as much attention as possible to all the worthy causes I'm campaigning on, and I want to champion as many different things in Sheffield as possible. I'm actually sick of people constantly telling me, Majid, like, maybe you should just tone it down, or Majid, maybe you shouldn't speak on that. Maybe you shouldn't be too political. But I don't have that privilege of not being political. It's like I'm a black Muslim refugee living in this current climate of things, and it will be such a disservice if I don't use my platform to speak out against certain injustices. There's been some really, really weird and wonderful times. Being asked if I can walk somebody down the aisle while they get married, that is such a privilege. And I actually spent the night at Windsor Castle, which I never thought would have been possible. And then there's some really odd times where like a lady got in touch and she was like, Majid, can I get a pair of your used socks? Because I collect used socks from certain notable people. So of course I oblige and make sure I wore my socks for 4 days straight. Why am I standing as an MEP for the Green Party? We're living at a time that kind of compels each of us to act. And I kind of thought, well, listen, my term's coming to an end. I've got so much more to say. There's so much more that I want to do. I want to loudly and proudly campaign for immigration, put the case for why immigration is great for the UK. I want to basically campaign for climate action. I want to campaign to remain in the European Union. Being the Lord Mayor of Sheffield has definitely opened my eyes and learned me so much about British politics and the current state that we're in. And Britain is definitely going through some sort of identity crisis, and Brexit is at the epicentre of that. And it really seems to be like a real battle for the soul of Britain. Like, does it belong to the people who want to close us off to the rest of the world? Or does it belong to people basically who want a inclusive, open, ambitious and country? as much as we are going through some really polarizing times in the UK, I am more hopeful than ever that things will work out and we will be able to bring people together. Oh, he said he forgot to press record. Damn. I'm joking. I know.
That was Majid Majid. You can find out more about him and candidates from other parties standing in the European elections on the website. My thanks to Hossein, Amelia Gentleman and Majid Majid. Today's episode was produced by Ian Chambers, India Rackerson, Elizabeth Cassin, Rachel Humphreys and Leah Green. Sound design was by Axel Cucoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.